Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, November 24th, 2009 Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. Alderman Gist is not able to be here tonight, and Alderman Brown is on her way. She's stuck in traffic, but she'll be here in a few minutes, hopefully. This is a public hearing meeting. We do not normally receive petitions from the public on matters that are not on our printed agenda. However, there are some folks who've come here tonight to speak about an issue that's going to be decided by the county commissioners relatively soon, and this is probably their last opportunity to petition us on the topic. And so we will, unless there's an objection, make an exception to our rule and recognize former Alderman Mark Dorison for a 3-minute presentation.
Thank you so much for making this exception. As Mayor Chilton noted, this is a matter of some immediacy, and so we really appreciate the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Mark Dorison. I am a senior attorney at the UNC Center for Civil Rights, and we've been representing residents of the Rogers, Millhouse, and Eubanks Road community, several of whom are here with me today and who were prepared to speak, but in the interest of time, they have graciously allowed me to stand up here and do that. So I just want to recognize them. With me is Robert Long, Neil Kirshner, and Reverend Campbell, who is just recently back from a summit at the White House on issues of environmental justice. As many of you know, or as probably all of you know, the county is Board of County Commissioners is getting ready to make a decision scheduled for December 7th on the siting of a solid waste transfer station. Recently, they have begun to consider a site referred to the Pettifer site on Millhouse Road. The consideration of this site, we believe, violates the intent, the spirit, and the letter of the detailed and deliberate selection process that's been designed, disregards the extensive public input, establishing criteria, as well as the county's purported commitment to such input, and ignores the overwhelming racial and socioeconomic disparate impacts of this site. Just a very brief bit of history, which again I know many of you probably know. The search for a waste transfer site began almost 2 years ago in December 2007. The county spent 6 months developing a set of criteria with extensive public input. In December 2008, a year after the process began, applying all the criteria and following the process, it was recommended that the county acquire a site on 54. At that time, the commissioners were expressly given and clearly rejected the option to revise the site, the evaluation process, and start again. On September 1st, 2009, almost 2 years after the selection process started and 10 months after a site which met all the established criteria was identified, the Pettifer site on Millhouse Road was introduced as a potential alternative. We believe that due process requires at a minimum that legal and governmental proceedings be fair and that a governmental decision maker not act in an arbitrary and capricious manner. Clearly defined and openly established policies and procedures and the impartial adherence to those policies once adopted are critical to protecting the due process rights of affected citizens. We believe that the Board of County Commissioners' decision at the last minute to apparently abandon these established procedures, criteria, and timeline betrays its commitment to due process. Lastly, equal justice considerations have been weighted highest and most highly valued of all the established criteria. Some people have suggested that the Pettifer site doesn't have any environmental justice impacts because it's somehow not part of the community that has borne nearly four decades of impacts from the landfill and related solid waste uses. This narrow conclusion fails to recognize the history of the community surrounding the landfill, the legacy and impacts of other uses in that area and developed in the neighborhood, and the anticipated noise, traffic, and odor increases and patterns throughout the area. In addition, the Pettifer site, as you probably know, directly abuts the old landfill property and as such clearly constitutes an extension of existing solid waste uses. Some have suggested, and it seems that the primary factor recommending this site is the cost, and some have implicitly acknowledged the environmental injustice issues by suggesting that some money that would be saved by not pursuing the Highway 54 site could be put towards a water or sewer solution for the Rogers Road area. This rationalization is a real betrayal of the social, racial, and economic justice values that this county and its residents hold dear. Water and sewer improvements have been promised to this community as compensation for the burden of living next to the landfill. And we believe that the county and this board and the town council in Chapel Hill are genuinely committed and acting in good faith to try to make those infrastructure improvements. But to suggest that these remedial measures be considered mitigation or consideration for additional and potentially perpetual ongoing solid waste uses perpetuates the legacy of disparate impacts on this under-resourced minority community, undermines the progress that this board and others have made to remedy those inequities, and belies the fundamental values of the county, Carrboro, and its residents, many of whom live on Rogers Road, I would add. As Jonathan Kozol once said, charity is no substitute for justice. What we are here tonight to ask you all to do is to adopt a resolution opposing the selection of the Pettifer site and forwarding it to the county commissioners. I know you all have one meeting between now and when the county commissioners meet, and I also know that's the meeting at which there's sort of the official swearing in of new members, and there's, I don't know that you usually schedule any other business at that time. So it would be even more pointed and poignant if you took that opportunity, I think, to adopt a resolution supporting the residents of the Millhouse, Eubanks, Rogers Road community, reinforcing this board and this town's commitment to racial and economic justice, and asking the Board of County Commissioners not to select the Pettifer site. Thank you very much.
Okay. I think this is a matter. I think that might have been 3.5 minutes, Mark. I think this is a matter that probably the Board of Aldermen will have to discuss amongst themselves to make a decision about whether or not we're going to consider a resolution at our next meeting. So I would recommend that we leave this topic there for right now and move on with our printed agenda. Okay. All right. So the first item is a resolution supporting Bi-Carrboro Week 2009.
This is a resolution supporting Bi-Carrboro Week as recommended by the local business network known as Local Motive. And there's no staff presentation.
Okay.
Let me just make a comment before moving. Well, I will move the item. And I just want to point out that the town's Local Living Economy Task Force, one of its first projects was creating a list of the top 10 benefits of supporting locally owned businesses, and those are incorporated into this resolution supporting Bi-Carrboro Week, which is going to be December 5th through 12th, 2009, in which many, if not all, Carrboro merchants will be participating in. So I guess that's that. I'll move the resolution.
A second. Okay.
All right. It's been moved and seconded for the resolution supporting Bi-Carrboro Week. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The matter passes very much unanimously. While we're on this topic briefly, Mr. Manager, are you able to give us any more idea about when the new parking lot might be online?
Well, for it to be kind of officially online, probably it'll be a couple of months.
Okay.
Because as we, I think, pointed out in the abstract, it's something Public Works will be doing along the way to work in with their other work. We're going to try to be in a position to make it minimally available informally.
Right.
You may recall there's...
It's chained off right now, is that right?
I don't know about that, but we don't have a signed agreement with the owner. Yeah,
right.
We're working on the final details of that. And also there is a zoning permit that has to be issued by the planning department, which hasn't been done yet. That's under review now. But, we're trying to get it in good enough shape that there will be some parking. And there's been some informal parking in recent weeks without any type of agreement.
I got you. Okay. Thanks for the update on it. All right. The first item on our public hearing agenda is a public hearing on the Chapel Hill Carborough 2035 long-range transit plan. Okay.
This is to receive public input and advisory board recommendations on the final draft of the 2035 long-range transit plan for Chapel Hill and Carborough, and there is a resolution in your packet that refers the comments for staff review, and that is recommended by staff. And Jeff Brubaker, our transportation planner, is here for the presentation, and I'll just point out that Steve Spade with Chapel Hill Transit is here in the audience tonight.
So this is just a brief overview of the plan. I know you received a more thorough presentation from David and Steve on October 6th. So I'm just going to touch on some key points of the plan, and then Steve is here to answer any questions. So as a general timeline for the plan, concept of a long-range transportation plan was discussed by the Transit Partners Committee in 2005. In February 2007, the Board of Aldermen approved an MOA to participate with Chapel Hill and the University in the development of the plan. And a draft of the plan was released in July of 2009. As I said, David and Steve presented on the plan in October. Then in November of 2009, there were two joint advisory board meetings to review the plan, and the public was invited to the second of these meetings. At this meeting, David and Steve presented more information about the plan and answered questions from advisory board members. So this is the modified high investment service concept. This is basically one of the principal recommendations of the plan. I'll just briefly touch on this map since I know you saw this in the presentation on October 6th. So one of the plan's core recommendations include introduction of higher level transit services serving six gateway nodes or heavily traveled entry points on major corridors in the Chapel Hill Carborough area. This concept assumes that significant park and ride capacity will be available at each gateway node, which is a colored circle represented by a number. The two corridors of Node and Carborough are corridors 7 and 8, which are proposed to have enhanced express bus services or limited stop express bus services. Corridor 7, the gateway node, is at Calvander, and it runs down Hillsborough before splitting off to downtown and Carolina North. And Corridor 8 uses the 54 bypass to access South Greensboro Street. It also serves downtown Carborough, downtown Chapel Hill, and Carolina North. In addition to the corridors, the gateway corridors, the plan also proposes enhanced local bus service. You can see in the green there, that's existing local bus routes. And then the orange proposes new bus routes. You can see that in the northern area, there's new bus routes proposed. And this plan basically draws on the 2030 and 2035 long-range transportation plans developed by the MPO. So the next steps in the plan tonight, this is the public hearing to receive public and advisory board input on the plan, and then refer, the staff recommendation is to refer the input and any additional comments you might have back to staff for further review. Mid-January 2010, staff will present a review and recommended revisions to the plan. The board can then provide additional review and comments and refer them to Chapel Hill staff. Chapel Hill staff have indicated that they will be developing plan revisions during this time, so that a revised plan can then be presented in February to the Transit Partners Committee, to advisory boards, and to the board for consideration for adoption. And with that, I'll leave any questions for me or for Steve.
Can I, Mark, I know we need to hear from the public.
Yeah,
can
we have three people questions. That, but yeah, go ahead.
Jeff. I didn't see any advisory board reaction in the packet. Is that because there hasn't been any? Are we expecting some from the last round of presentations? Do you know?
I know just from staffing the TAB that there was no formal recommendation from the TAB last Thursday.
Okay.
But there was some commentary that will show up in the minutes. And I think in...
What about planning board?
Trish might be able to speak to that.
Planning board is planning to, excuse me for saying that, make comments on at their December 3rd meeting, finish up their review and make comments that night.
Thanks. And my other question is staff asking us to hold off on board discussion until we hear from you again in January? Is that correct? Or?
I would say not necessarily. Any board discussion and commentary could also be directed to staff for review along with any public comments. And any advisory board, if not formal recommendations, then comments tonight.
Okay, thanks.
One question. So far, this process, how much public input has it received until now?
I can only speak to the Carrboro side of things, and recently, since I'm new, obviously we had the two advisory board meetings, the second of which the public was invited. Steve might be able to speak to additional public review that happened before that, or Trish as well.
This is at least the second, maybe the third time that we've seen, you know, some initial and then secondary draft of this. I don't think we've held a public hearing before tonight, though, on the topic.
Okay, I have three people signed up to speak. Let's go ahead and hear from them. Giles Blunden is the first person.
For having me, I just wanted to say how important I think the rail transport corridor is. It already exists. It's a right-of-way that Carver is very lucky to have. There's no acquisition problems at right-of-way. It would connect very close to the university to Carolina North. And I think, given that this is 2035. Seems like if global warming is as serious as a lot of people think it is, I think having a real alternative to buses and cars is going to be really important. you know, connecting those two points, where the rail line goes through Carrboro economically would be in a very good position because there's already a railway station, and it certainly make a railway stop. You know, those people go from the university to Carolina North. So I think it really should be an important part of this plan. And without any commitment, it certainly isn't going to happen. You know, if there's no commitment, it isn't going to happen. It doesn't just happen out of the blue. It isn't going to happen from Raleigh. It's going to happen from Carrboro because Carrboro wants it. And so I think it's really important to add that to the, you know, basically to this long-range transit plan. I mean, to me, it's a short-range issue because by 2035, there's going to be a lot of changes. Fossil fuels not going to be cheap at all. I mean, they're going to be really expensive because of everything that's coming along, either shortages or carbon caps. So I really think, you know, putting Carrboro making a commitment to that is an important piece of this plan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next person signed up is Mike Benson.
While he's coming up, Mark, can I make two comments in response to Giles? In terms of the rail line, the one important thing to recognize about this plan is that this is a local plan. And in looking at it, it was an understanding that rail is going to be part of a regional solution. And perhaps we'll talk about that a little more later in terms of the local option sales tax that we'll be considering next year and that sort of thing. But there are regional discussions underway about how to implement rail. And one very good reason for that is that the capital costs of rail are 80 times the cost of the express bus service that we're looking at for the routes through Carrboro. And a municipality our size, or us in Chapel Hill, whereas Charlotte can afford to build a light rail system, we cannot. And I think Giles makes a good point that perhaps over time those equations will start to change, and I think we'll do well to be ready to respond to those changes. And in fact, if you look at the Carolina North Development Agreement, it explicitly makes the point that the rail option needs to remain open and viable for the future. But for now, the cost equation basically means that rail is not an option for a local community because it's vastly expensive. We're talking about $40 million per mile. And it is something that we are looking at that we will be served as part of a regional solution. So I'll leave that for now, but just wanted to make those points. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, I'm Mike Benson. And I understand some of what you're saying. I found the Southern Rail in Carrboro. I think with the existing rail band, I have to deal with Norfolk Southern on a regular basis. They're the land lease owner of where I'm at. And I've asked them about the rail bed itself coexisting on that rail bed. And the first answers were, well, the rail bed is not situated to do public transit. And then I was like, well, how can you carry 12 coal cars completely laden with that not way more than the public? And they said, well, okay, well, you know, we'd have to do feasibility studies. And then there's issues of negotiating with when the coal cars would be going to university. And I met with the engineers because they come in and have coffee all the time. And they said, well, that's very simple. You know, we have a very regular posted schedule, and it would be very easy to work in having a light transit system put in. And, you know, Carrboro, having been the railroad tie capital of the entire world for quite a while, when this was the Alberta Mill, it seems that the upfront investment that it would take for us to really consider light rail, I mean, 2 weeks ago, I flew over Greenland, and the pilot got on the intercom, and he said, if you look out the side of the aircraft, you'll see lakes. They were not here 3 years ago, ever. This is, you know, what is happening to our planet is happening faster than we're ready to deal with it. And we're pushing back on something where if you look at the cost of what it takes to have a train haul that much weight, people or coal or freight or whatever, it's pennies on the mile compared to a bus. Even with clean burning buses, we're still way behind. Not to mention, I have to take buses every now and then. If I know that I'm going to go, I live in downtown Chapel Hill, and if I know I'm going to have a few beers, I'll take the bus in so I don't have to drive. And if you do it during traffic hours, it is painful. Imagine trying to take that bus to Washington, D.C., making the connections out of Carrboro. Whereas with the rail system, we can connect. I mean, there are routes right now out of Hillsboro where we can connect right into one of the main hubs from Charlotte, Greensboro, Burlington, Hillsboro, Durham, Raleigh, north up into Richmond, Petersburg, and Fredericksburg, Washington, D.C., from Washington, D.C., New York City, Montreal, Boston. It's there. It's viable. And the government under Obama right now is pushing with tax incentives and trying to find viable ways for us to look outside the box, get outside of our vehicles. We're talking about parking lots and parking issues and everything else. The one thing I'm really amazed about in Carrboro is the amount that people ride a bicycle and walk. And the ability of being able to do that can only take you so far. You can't go see the Durham Bulls on a bicycle. But you can if there's some mode of public transportation. Right now we use Triangle Transit, and it's very good, but it's still very difficult to make these things happen on a regular basis. You know, when is the bus coming? When is it leaving? I'd like to come back. And it's great that it's a good start, but we can go further with this. And I love this area. I just spent 10 years living in Washington, D.C., and I've been blown away that they've been talking for 5 years about how to run a metro line out to Dulles Airport. And finally, somebody in the Dulles corridor got on and said, this is ridiculous. We've planned and planned and planned, and in a matter of 2 weeks, they've broken ground, and they're now running the line. It finally just took someone very angry to say, let's stop planning. Let's stop talking about it. Let's make it happen. And it's going. And that's what it takes, and we have that ability. And I love Carrboro, and I love being a business person here, and I love the people here. And I just think that it's something that we can push it on the back burner and go, well, it's expensive. It's this. It's that. I mean, we ripped up all the light rail lines back in the 50s when General Motors bought all the light rail and put buses in. And it's just a frustrating situation because I went to one of the Triangle Transit meetings in Raleigh, and they kept talking about light rail from Raleigh to Durham. And Chapel Hill and Carrboro was not even included on the map. And I was like, this is not Triangle. This is Raleigh and Durham. And both of them already have Amtrak, which we don't have here. So I'll just leave it at that. Dan, I appreciate what you're saying, and I know there's an expense, but there are ways to make it work that's cheaper. And working with Norfolk Southern, I know that they have a lot of issues going, but they own that rail bed that they own, the property line, is quite wide that they have. And it is possible at this point to even build another rail bed that runs parallel to the rail line that they have. So there are ways to make this work. I think it just takes having people looking outside the box and figuring it out. And I think that the people in Carrboro and the town council in Carrboro if there's anybody in the state of North Carolina that has a very progressive vision of what's going on, I think it's where we're at right now. So that's it. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. Thanks,
Marcy, can I clarify something?
Yeah.
Just to clarify, there is in the plan a light rail plan from Carrboro. From Durham to Chapel Hill.
Okay.
Yeah, that's. The question is whether it's phase one or phase two, but we're not prepared to answer. Anyway, the next person signed up. Last person signed up is James Carnahan.
Good evening. As I'm a member of the planning board, which is yet to deliberate and make a recommendation, I want to be clear that these are my personal comments only. At the Sierra Club candidates forum, Mayor Chilton and then candidate Sammy Slade both made very passionate comments about the need to address global warming. To have that be a real priority of our community. And at the same forum, Alderman Haven O'Donnell spoke about the need for a master planning process, a comprehensive process that would look at, ideally, Carrboro and Chapel Hill and the universities, the same parties to this piece of work. Much more broadly, addressing all of the issues in relation to the challenge of climate change. But this hasn't happened. And in the absence of that kind of planning, this document, in a way, will work as a default master plan because of the role that transportation plays in the way the community will take shape in the future. And I think there are fundamental problems with how this was put together. And my recommendation, my first and foremost recommendation, would be to table this indefinitely And let's get together with Chapel Hill and the university, and let's do a real master planning process that puts climate change and carbon reduction at the very forefront. What do we want to look like in 2035 in a way that's going to address this really grave and urgent challenge? I'm going to quote some of the language from this to make this point. The study seeks to assess the impact of anticipated future population and employment and resulting growth in travel demand. Identify the role public transportation could play in mitigation of future congestion and potential roadway expansions. Another piece, according to regional projections, the combined community population is expected to grow to nearly 102,000 people by 2035. This long-range transportation plan utilizes the Raleigh-Durham regional travel demand model, called the Triangle Regional Model, to project 2035 travel demand in and out of Carrboro and Chapel Hill. And I finally, in defining the transit market, a conceptual service plan was developed to capture the broader trip making evident in the study area. This sounds like the tail wagging the dog. This sounds like a market study. It doesn't mention anything about these larger challenges. And I'm going to repeat my primary point. This is an epical challenge, and this kind of thing needs to address that. It seems to be absent. It's going to solve congestion, perhaps, but it's not really addressing the real challenges that confront us and our children. What was said about this plan, the service concept, about the idea of having park and rides at all of these places, again, yes, that it addresses congestion, but it assumes that the future employment in Chapel Hill and Carrboro is going to be fed by people living outside who are going to drive, and some of them quite a long distance, and the only energy savings is going to be the very short distance from their park and ride at one of these hubs into the center. In terms of energy and carbon reduction, the design guidelines lack any reference to climate change, to carbon reduction. They present an image of new traditional form, pretty much, and in the language is taken mainly from Chapel Hill's material. There's nothing in it from Carrboro at all. And there's nothing in it about high-performance building. There's nothing in it about solar orientation. There's nothing in it about solar access, solar easements. So at the very least, I think these design guidelines, I think they do would play an important role, but their scope needs to be expanded. And finally, I'm going to join everybody else and say the rail line is really important. And I appreciate what Dan said. I know that it's going to be very expensive up front, but somebody is going to pay for it to come from the Durham County line to go to the University Hospital. And so it seems it's just as easy to ask the same somebody to help pay for bringing this line to downtown Chapel Hill and carrying it over to Carolina North. And I think that the role that this would play in Carrboro's economic development is a powerful one. The difference of being on a regional rail system, of being out at the end of this system that goes to the core, can be a terrific enhancement to the cultural place that we want to be, to the arts community, that we want to thrive here. I think those are, for me, it's you know, somebody being able to get on the train in Raleigh or Durham or Cary and ride to a cultural event in downtown Carrboro is really important. And so particularly, just to get this, I want to mention historically, boards of aldermen have endorsed this idea the first time, 29th of April, 1998. It was a unanimous vote. The only person from that board still on the board now was Jacqueline Gist. The 7th of December, 2004, basically re-endorsed the idea, the inclusion of this rail line extending up to Carolina North in the 2030 LRTP. And just so we're clear what we're talking about, it's the gateway service 5A and 5B. And in fact, the 5B figure shows the light rail coming all the way into downtown Carrboro, but that doesn't show up on this plan. And Gateway Service 5A is the light rail continuing up to Carolina North. Thank you.
Thank you. Before you leave the podium, so what is it that how do you what do you see as the shortcomings of this plan? I mean, specifically, I mean, I understand you're saying that you think it should have been approached differently, but with what different result, for just hypothetically even?
The university plays a huge role in this, and
but they played a huge role in this.
That's yeah.
Document.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. 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 And they talk about how sustainable they want to be. And they achieve that on many levels, but they're operating a coal plant. They're burning coal in Chapel Hill. How long is that going to be able to go on? As you know from the lengthy deliberations on the Advisory Committee on Carolina North, that we pleaded with them again and again to have a significant, a really, really significant amount of housing for their employees.
Yes.
Both of these things contradict their claims to being leaders in sustainability. The effects that are spawned by the lack of housing are huge, and this plan doesn't. It seems to assume that most people are going to keep driving. Most of the people who come to work here, the 20,000 more people, are going to drive to park and rides, and then they're going to continue on public transportation. I mean, I don't know the answer, but answer when you set a broader set of goals and you set a specific target, you say we want to address climate change, and how can we achieve the greatest carbon reduction in this community? If you put that as the thing that drives this, you will get a different result.
I guess the reason I challenge you on that point is I feel like one of the things I remember that we begged and pleaded with the university about in the Carolina North Leadership Advisory Committee. On the LAC was for them to engage with us as a town and with Chapel Hill as a town in doing a long-range public transit plan, you know, that we begged and pleaded with them to enter into just this exact planning process that this is the result of. And I got to say, to go back to them and say, Oh, yeah. Well, actually, you know, that thing that that we told you that you really needed to do to engage with Chapel Hill and Carrboro and show your good faith, UNC, we want to throw that in the waste bin and start over is, I mean, and without, from my point of view, the only issue that anybody has there are only two issues that have really been raised here. One is this question about the rail corridor versus MLK, and that's a debate that we can and should be having right now. As far as those entry point nodes and the discussion of park and ride, I think that's conceptual. That means that is a, you know, where number seven is that's the sort of terminus of planning for the purposes of this report. But whether it's really a park and ride lot there or a switch to a different type of bus line that continues on to Graham and Burlington, or whether in fact that number seven line might one day just flat out run all the way to places like Graham and Burlington, is something that the plan is, that's a possibility the plan is open to, or if it's not, then that's my comment. It needs to be. But to say that we should throw this out and start completely over, I don't see how we could even begin to have a conversation with the university about doing something like that.
I think,
could I respond to that first? I said that first knowing that it was probably highly unlikely, and that's why I focus on the importance of having more conversation about the rail line and looking at these design guidelines. But I have to say that as we continue to get news of the indicators that climate change is happening, A, and B, the severity of the potential outcomes, that we have to keep asking ourselves, are we doing the best to address this? And if we've got something that potentially conflicts with the best choices we might make, then wouldn't we want to know that? And at some point, we may also finally hear some national mandates, and those mandates too would play a role in whether or not and how this kind of a plan went forward.
I think the point of the greenhouse gas emissions, I looked at one of the reports that had one page in the back taking into account the inventory that Durham has done and fit it in within how significant this plan is. When you look at the inventory Orange County did, the forecast and inventory, it shows a pie chart of which half of the greenhouse gas emissions found for Orange County is transportation. The fact that we don't have that plan connecting as much to this one and informing this plan, I agree with you, is pretty problematic. I think the positive thing, though, is that we're just now getting into the public input aspect of it, and we'll be able to ask for that to be implemented or addressed or informing this plan. I think it's very important to have the people informing the plan, and the fact that we're just beginning that should let us know how far we have to go still.
You need to speak to Mr. Carnahan about this?
I do,
okay.
And the other folks who spoke, because even back in October 6th when David and Steve presented, I've consistently felt that Carrboro needs to stand solidly behind having the light rail on the table to continue to push. I understand the financial issue. I also understand that we absolutely have to, you know, stand up and ask to be counted in our opinion about having the light rail. I think it's critical. I think it's forward thinking. I think having a transportation plan that is individual petroleum based, is so short-sighted. But I understand where this plan is coming from, and I think, you know, I appreciate what the bus transit's going to do and the concept of the nodes, but that should not mean we do not look at light rail and continue to push for it for Carrboro.
Well, this is not necessarily, I mean, this plan is not at odds necessarily with the, in any, it doesn't actually address the issue of TTA right. at all, really.
What's the issue of TTA?
Well, in other words, I mean, you're saying the question of whether Carrboro gets light rail is not the plan is right now to bring light rail at some point down the 54 corridor into Carrboro and up to basically the vicinity of the hospital somewhere, the possibility of extending that further to Carrboro is not, I mean, that's again a relevant discussion that we should have, but it's not doesn't really relate to this particular plan. Doesn't seem to me.
I guess, when you all are done with James, I have some comments.
As far as I know, this is informed a lot by those plans. Is that correct? This plan, Steve, is that correct that this plan is informed by the triangle plan?
Well, I was going to speak to that.
As far as I've seen in that plan, the 5A option isn't salient. So it would make sense for Carrboro to be engaging now through this plan to make sure that the plan that this plan is informed by includes the option people of Carrboro want.
I think you can probably have a seat. Thanks.
Thanks, Jay.
Dan.
Yeah, couple of comments. First of all, this is a transit plan. It's not a stop global warming plan or a sustainability plan. It doesn't deal with daylighting because it doesn't have buildings in it. It's a transit plan. It's what this board agreed to, I guess, close to 3 years ago when we embarked on this after significant discussions, as Mark points out, on the Leadership Advisory Council and elsewhere, and that we entered into with good faith. It's not a land use plan. It took as a given the existing land use plans for Chapel Hill and Carrboro and the plans that were in place for the university. And really, if you're doing a plan, you can't do anything else. You can't, our consultants on the transit plan couldn't engage in conjecture, and we certainly weren't hiring them to propose. We did ask them to look at opportunities for transit-oriented development, which they've done, and there are places identified in that. But it is a plan that's driven by the other existing plans, by the data in terms of, as James pointed out, the population projections that are available based on current zoning, and you know, we expect we'll change zoning over time, and that will perhaps change the nature of the transit system as our population configurations change. And I think we all expect that it will, and it's our goal that it will, and it's in part the goal of this plan. I certainly know that, you know, there was some controversy in Chapel Hill in the last election about their decision in recent years to place higher density along some of these transit lines. So even though we've had agreement from Chapel Hill, that's certainly not non-controversial across the border there. In terms of all the fine sentiments that past boards of aldermen have stated about the transit line, and which Randy echoed tonight, I mean, that's well and good when you're talking in general, and I think every one of us would love to have rail service coming into Carrboro. There's no question about it. But when we're looking at light rail, the cost of which to Carrboro would be at least as much as our entire current debt service. And I don't know offhand what that would mean in terms of tax burden on our citizens, but, you know, half again to doubling it, somewhere in that range to do this. You know, you might, well, we've all, not all of us, several of us have been on the campaign trail. And I think if you ask that question, where is the political will?
That wasn't what people were asking for.
Right, exactly. It was all that extra taxes. And so until, you know, I guess it was Mike who made reference to, you know, oh, Obama wants to provide incentives for this and that. And I tell you, when the federal money is there to build a rail line coming out of Carrboro, we're going to jump on that. You know, I believe Chapel Hill will go along with that. I believe the university will go along with that as long as it doesn't interfere with their coal deliveries. But that money's not there. And so this is a plan based on federal and state funding that can be predictable as of 2009, based on our land use plans that are in here as of 2009. And it's a plan that looks at, based on people with significant consultants who have significant expertise in this and who bring their own models to bear in terms of numerous model runs on looking at different permutations of ridership, have figured out which routes would give the greatest ridership and what the best way to pay for those routes would be by using certain configurations of how to provide service. And so, you know, if someone wanted to make a motion tonight that said the Carrboro Board of Aldermen supports the use of the rail line, you know, I would agree to that. But if someone was to make a motion that said, in the next 5 years, we're going to implement light rail, or even in the next 20 years, we're going to implement light rail, I couldn't vote for that because I don't have any idea how we could do that or how that would be an investment that the people of Carrboro would support, other than, you know, there are people who, you know, like James and Giles and a few others who will come out all the time and tell us how great rail is, and we agree with that. But, you know, all the taxpayers aren't saying that and are not going to pay those bills. So I guess, you know, what I'm trying to say is that this is a plan that we can start working right now to increase ridership on Chapel Hill Transit. And increasing ridership on Chapel Hill Transit is one of the best means we have in 2009 and in 2010 to combat the carbon emissions in this community. Absolutely, perhaps the very best. And this enables us to do it. It's a plan that allows us to start, once it's approved, and start implementing things. There's no long horizons for funding or planning, land acquisition, complex negotiations, any of that kind of stuff. It's a plan we can go ahead and do. And rather than, you know, go back to the drawing board and have 3 years, 5 years doing another plan, you know, and all that opportunity cost lost, you know, and I'm not averse to getting together with our neighbors and talking about climate change as an overriding issue. I believe it should be, and that it's a huge challenge for us to figure out how to do that. But I don't think that bears on adopting this plan any more than it bears on, you know, the fact that, you know, however many it is, you know, 11 out of 12 of our police cars are not hybrids this year, you know, and they may be as we replace them in the future, but, you know, it's not a wholesale change. But anyway, I'm kind of taking a long time to make some simple points, but I kind of wanted to give some background and talk about this being a very practical plan and a plan that can be implemented and that does address climate change.
Go ahead.
The cost associated with light rail on the current corridor are prohibitively high. It is definitely something that people of Carrboro wouldn't want to expand their taxes for. I guess my question is, I understand this plan is something that is to evolve as situations change, as the economy gets worse or better, the higher gas prices, the urgency of dealing with climate change, all these things happen. My concern is that it not being included, and I understand that all these lines will be done in different phases, I don't think necessarily that having it included, maybe the back burner within the plan, you know, not prioritized, because we are prioritizing, for example, MLK and 54. There would be an opportunity to, as we plan for Carolina North, for example, already an objection is that the current drawings for it are all so that Carolina North is facing MLK, and that for that reason, the rail corridor may not be as usable. Well, that's just one example of many that will come online if we don't have it in this plan, so that when land use decisions are made, that it's taken into account. Another point I wanted to make was that the one of the objections to the rail line is that there isn't enough ridership for it. And yet the MLK line is prioritized number one. I would argue that both of these corridors are interchangeable in when you look at ridership as an option or a measure of whether they're viable or not. They essentially serve the same route. They go from I-40, serve Carolina North, then go into the university. The advantage of the rail line is that it actually also serves Carrboro, and for Carrboroans, that would be an extra advantage. I think Steve Spade, during his early October meeting, mentioned that MLK, using federal standards, already meets their threshold for justifying light rail. So if that applies to MLK, then it could apply also to the rail line. Then other objections have been raised, such as the coal deliveries that come on a daily basis, that the other one I briefly mentioned, that the master plan for Carolina North is oriented towards MLK as its main corridor. And then the impact on Main Street, how to have there be a crossing over Main Street. And then the triangle transit experience of the headaches of negotiating with Norfolk Southern. I mean, obviously, these are all hurdles. I would like to propose that there are a lot of advantages that aren't necessarily being taken into account, one being that it's essentially a de facto new road into downtown Carrboro. Already there's a bottleneck in downtown Carrboro. We're talking about a bunch of new developments for downtown Carrboro. So in as much as we have an option to alleviate that bottleneck, that will only get worse, then we're better off. So those are opportunity costs that we aren't taking into account. Bear in mind that light rail is definitely very expensive, but that corridor could also be used not necessarily for light rail, but for an alternative, lesser costing option. The other advantage is that it connects the northern neighborhoods with downtown Carrboro. It opens a direct route to I-40, skipping Chapel Hill traffic. Many tonight have mentioned the energy efficiency aspects of it. It doesn't contribute to further building the already bloated car infrastructure. And then the various resolutions and the vision, the 2020 vision Carrboro has, seeks that we push for light rail or an option along that corridor. I guess my main, concluding, my main hopes are, in light of the concerns dealing with greenhouse gas emissions, the board is supposed to be getting some information from staff on the greenhouse gas inventory and forecast soon. I just think that this points to how important this kind of the follow-up to the greenhouse gas inventory and forecast is, and that perhaps we could recommend or ask the Environmental Advisory Board to get a jump start on that, in that the next step in the greenhouse gas emission inventory is to identify targets. So the Environmental Advisory Board could compare what the scientific consensus is saying relative to the ICLEI greenhouse gas inventory and forecast. And that I understand that Chapel Hill on December 8th and January 12th is going to have at the Chapel Hill Council chambers some more comments on this plan. If we could include those for the board when we look at this again, those comments, I guess the ones that are relevant to Carrboro, we don't necessarily need to hear everything else. And then finally, if it would be possible to seek commentary from the Transportation Advisory Board, considering that we didn't get any today.
Well, clearly, you know, there's interest in discussing light rail on this board. What I'd like to do, since what's before us on attachment A is to receive the comments and to refer to staff, I'd like to move that, move attachment A, and perhaps look to have light rail further investigated by staff and schedule some time for us to chat about that separately, because that seems to be a whole discussion separate from this that is, I would really like to see us get behind, but I'd like to move attachment A first.
Okay.
Attachment
A has been moved and seconded. There is one more person who wants to speak, but do you want to go?
I just wanted to add to Randy's request that when we have the discussion to have some financial projections.
Patrick.
Good evening. My name is Patrick McDonough. I'm a Carrboro resident, and many of you know me in my day job where I work as a transportation planner at Triangle Transit, and I was a member of the technical committee for this study. I want to be extremely clear that I'm presenting my own opinions and in no way am representing my employer, Triangle Transit. I'm making these comments as a Carrboro citizen, taxpayer, and somebody who, most I think importantly for this evening, has ridden the bus in Carrboro for 8 years. First, I'm encouraged by the emphasis this document places on linking transit to compact, mixed-use, walkable land use patterns. I like that the document briefly discusses extending local service later in the evening, and I am very glad that the document assumes that the fare-free policy, which is probably Chapel Hill Transit's signature innovation in the country, is assumed to remain in place into the future. That said, this document has some shortcomings. I'd like to discuss them. The document focuses heavily on the needs of park and ride commuters to UNC and comparatively little on the needs of residents in Carrboro or the needs of residents in certain parts of Chapel Hill, for that matter. Section 8, financial section, the primary focus is two preferred corridor projects that have total capital costs of $275 million, with $184 million of that being for parking decks. Parking decks benefit people who live outside the community, and they benefit the university as well, and the university is an important economic generator, so that's not a complete loss at all. But after 23 pages of detailing how we pay for these two park and ride-driven facilities, there are a series of small paragraphs detailing how we would improve local service, which is estimated at $93 million. So I'm trying to highlight the comparison of inside-outside spending there. And I think you could have a debate on the merits of that. More discouraging, though, is when you look in the implementation section, the verbiage at the top says, while this LRTP offers a wide range of services, not all can be implemented at once. This section sets priorities and defines a course of action to move these priorities forward, end quote. In Section 9, there's no mention of local bus service in Chapel Hill or Carrboro. But there are Gantt charts leading to the opening of the park and ride-based services. In short, this document reads more like a dual corridor study for Martin Luther King Boulevard and US 15501. Both of these corridors are very important for our community and for UNC, and it is very appropriate that we plan for their needs. There's nothing wrong with that. However, the level of detail given to local service in this plan needs strengthening. I recently read the Asheville Transit Master Plan, which was released in September. And part of that, there were detailed charts. They surveyed the public, and they surveyed riders and non-riders, so they have by pie chart. What's the most important priority for people who ride the bus today, for people who would like to ride the bus but don't because it doesn't meet their needs, and they have the reasons why. So they have those priorities laid out. This type of information is needed in this document. More of it would, any of it would be great. I think one other thing that this plan is a little bit of a shortcoming is when we show that map of improved local service, it assumes the current routes are all in the right place. Mm-hmm. I ride the CW and it works great until lunchtime. And then after that, it's actually quicker for me to walk to downtown because the loop changes direction. So I think that improving frequency is great and going later in the evening is great, but we need to get to more trade-offs, like would you as a citizen rather have service every 30 minutes till 10 p.m. or once an hour till 1 a.m.? From our attempts to develop a local living economy, one of Chapel Hill and Carrboro's competitive advantages is that we are an evening entertainment district. Out-of-towners come to venues here, and local residents try to get to downtowns, too, both of the downtowns, but parking is hard to come by. We have a 400-space lot over at Jones Ferry Road. There's a big lot at the Friday Center that empties out at 5 p.m. once employees leave the university. Should we be doing a C line between Carrboro and Chapel Hill, like Raleigh runs the R line around their downtown and evening entertainment district? I don't know what priority that has with local citizens compared to these enhanced express bus services or local service expansions or crosstown routes, another good suggestion that's in this plan. But it would be great to get more feedback from the public on what the trade-offs are that they want the most. I think Steve might have some survey data from a little while back. I've seen some of that before. That's a real good survey. If we could include some of that, it'd be great. And just fleshing out the details on the local bus service is what would strengthen this item. In closing, in the last couple of years, operations for Chapel Hill Transit have really improved. On-time performance is better. I can say that very clearly. The Next Plus deployment is excellent. And a few times when I've complained, Steve has emailed me back very quickly. You don't get to write to the top often and get a response back, and I appreciate that. I'd hope our planning for local bus would raise the bar in a similar fashion. And I'm done, and I didn't say the words light rail.
Thanks, Matt. Mark, could we ask Steve to come up? I think he could speak to how we're going to be developing the local bus service plan and how we got to these two particular routes as the primary.
Steve,
focus.
Can you briefly address that question of what the somebody was talking in his ear while you were saying that, Dan? What was
Steve? I was speaking. You were listening.
As usual, I was paying attention to somebody else, Dan.
Yeah, that's right. I should be used to it by now. If you could describe how we're going to be planning the enhancement of local service, kind of the point Patrick was speaking to, and why that's not in this plan in any great detail, and also a little bit on why it is we're looking at two particular routes are getting a lot of the emphasis as opposed to many other routes.
Yeah, and I'll answer the questions in reverse.
Yeah.
The long-range transit plan, after some discussion, was focusing on the corridors because that's where the most of the congestion was. And when they took a look at the corridors that we had and did the traffic and ridership projections, the focus tended to be toward those that were going to have the greatest congestion and the greatest traffic, and those were corridors number one and corridor number three. Corridor number four was pulled out of the discussion because it is part of the 2035 long-range transportation plan included as part of the light rail system. So I think there's always been an assumption that is going to be, matter of fact, that's probably the heaviest corridor we've got in the community. But the assumption was, since it was in the regional plan, that we'd focus the efforts on the next two here. So that's kind of how we got into those. When in terms of looking at local service, really did kind of a 10,000-foot, big look, saying, if you're going to have a higher order of transit in your major corridors, then you also have to have supporting local service. And the consultants then projected what they thought was a necessary growth in service in terms of the number of hours of service per day, but really didn't get into designing what the local routes would look like in 2035. This is supposed to be a snapshot of 2035. The idea is that as you start to develop the short-range transit plans and identify the service concepts that are going to be in each corridor, then we'll get real specific about designing the local service. And Patrick makes some really good points that today our current local routes are kind of extensions of routes that there's another development, so you're kind of chasing development through the community. We need to rethink those routes. There's also a need, and as we've surveyed the community, we found that improved evening service, improved Saturday service, and the introduction of Sunday service are key things that need to be included. So those are the kind of things that would then be included in the short-range transit plan that then comes forward for public comment again. And I think that will start. That's the time that we start getting into those kind of detail.
Thanks, Steve.
I just need to ask you one follow-up question. So with regards to the local route, when then are we expected to see Chapel Hill Transit and its partnership look at that, I suppose?
The current timetable is that we would hope to have some kind of long-range transit plan adopted in the spring of 2010. At that time, and probably in January, February, March, we will begin work on our short-range transit plan, which is the first short-term 5 to 7 year snapshot or look at how we think the system needs to change to start getting to where you want to see us in 2035. That's when we're going to come back. And we think it's going to take anywhere from 9 months to a year to develop that plan. So we would be back maybe a year from now, having gone through the process that as Patrick defined, of public input, marketing studies, trying to get a sense of what people want to see in the way of service, measuring the way our service performs now, and starting to make recommendations on how the service would change. Also looking forward to where you see the service being in 2035.
Okay. Steve, with respect to the question of the interchangeability or alternatives to one another between the MLK and the rail corridor, is that a valid way to view that option, that axis?
I think to a certain extent it is. Some of the travel from 40 to Carolina North obviously could occur in either corridor. I think if you start looking at long term, you have to make some trade-offs. And so there are a lot of really good points tonight that need to be considered. The opportunity to have a lot of improvements in the kind of service you see in Carborough by using this right away, with the question of, is it as competitive looking for federal funding as Martin Luther King? We don't know. It's not included in the region's long-range transportation plan for 2035. Does that mean that it can't be considered, or that can't be considered for inclusion as the long-range transportation plan's updated? I don't know. But it seems to me that what we're hearing is that there needs to be some more thought given to that.
Would it make sense to include it so that we'd then be able to figure out whether there's federal funding available to it, or does that not help understand rail line as an option?
Understanding that this plan is supposed to represent what the community sees as its needs and what it wants the system to look like in 2035, and as a resident of Carborough myself, I would hope that the plan reflects what the community wants, regardless of what's going on out there, in one way or another. So whether it's in the plan or there's some commitment by the partners to say, when we look at Martin Luther King, we do an alternatives analysis, there's a commitment that we'll also look at the relationship with the rail corridor and other opportunities there to better serve the community. I think something needs to happen. I mean, what you're hearing tonight is there's an interest in doing that. So the priority of that shouldn't be lost in this plan.
As I understand, the contractors originally included the plan and because they saw it as a viable option.
Right.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
We had that conversation. I should make sure everyone understands that.
Yeah. Well, and these are all just comments for the staff to take into account in developing, I guess, the final...
We had which conversation?
The conversation with Chapel Hill and UNC about the rail line.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we being the board, but not being, the town of Carver.
We being the
transit partners.
Being the long range transit committee.
Right.
So now it's the public's chance.
Yeah. Okay. All those in favor of referring these comments to the staff, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously for now. All right. Item B2, a public hearing on a land use ordinance text amendment to allow 5.110 uses as permissible B4 zoning district.
Sayer Matko has requested an amendment to our land use ordinance to allow the 5.110 elementary and secondary schools as permissible use in the B4 zoning district. And you all have a draft ordinance that's been prepared, and I think Trish has some modifications to that she'll be sharing with you all. And it's appropriate for you all to take public comment prior to considering action on the ordinance.
Trish? Thank you. Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. We want to run the train to the B4. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. There is one of the transit routes does run along in front of the B4 zoning district, though, so it is covered actually partly in the plan. This text amendment was initiated by Sarah Macca, who is one of the property owners of a piece of the B4 zoning district. And in this property owner's communications with the Pace Academy, it was learned that the B4 zoning district doesn't allow elementary and secondary schools. Pace Academy is a local secondary school that provides an education and vocational training for high school students from Wake County, Durham, Chatham, and Orange counties. And so this Ms. Macco submitted this text amendment to request that the use be allowed in that district.
Where is her property exactly?
Her property is located where the old Harris Distributors building is.
Oh, okay.
So it is right in this location.
Yeah, that was not clear on the...
Okay.
Okay.
We have provided at your places a revised draft ordinance as we continue to consider this this proposed ordinance. We felt that there were some tweaks that we would like you all to consider from the version that was included in your packet last Friday. And so the amendment that you have in front of you includes two sections, the first of which changes the table of permissible uses to make the 5.110 uses allowed in the B4 zoning district with a zoning permit. And then there's parenthetical L next to that Z. It would be included in the table. That L would then be explained, essentially. It basically means that there's some kind of limitation associated with the zoning permit. And then there's a subsection added to Section 15-147 that would clarify that the zoning permit the use is allowed with a zoning permit only when it's proposed within an existing building, so long as there are no other substantial changes needed to the site to allow the use.
Give me some examples of substantial changes.
Well, the section it refers to the Section 15-46 of the ordinance, which basically says clearing of land. Let me just refer to that section so I can not. No substantial clearing, grading, or excavation. No addition of buildings or other substantial structures. Moving of structures or alteration of them. Essentially those kinds of activities.
Okay.
Okay. We have several people signed up to speak. If we can go straight to that.
This is the map showing the locations of the zoning, the B4 zoning district. So we have developed portions of the B4 zoning district here and here and here, and then undeveloped portions of it over here along 54. We do see a consistency with this amendment to Vision 2020, the policy that deals with supporting human service needs that are beyond those met by services the county provides. And the ordinance has been reviewed, although the planning board did not see the review, the version that's in front of you. Apologize. We just, continue to reevaluate this and wanted to offer this revision to you this evening. But the planning board did recommend adoption of the draft ordinance in a more expanded version. This is a tightening of the change, essentially. Orange County staff did review this and found no inconsistency, and the staff is recommending adoption of the ordinance. Ms. Macco and agents of hers are here this evening as well, and happy to answer any other questions or as you wish.
Okay. The first person signed up to speak is Michael Hubbard.
My name is Michael Hubbard, and I'm here just mainly to speak as a proud parent of a Pace Academy student. I think Pace Academy is a great resource for the community, especially for students who aren't necessarily taking advanced placement courses or getting merit scholarships. They're still part of our community, and I think that students like this are very well served by Pace Academy. Pace Academy has a proven track record of success with students like that. They graduate, many go on to college, and I think that it's a valuable resource that the community should encourage. Right now they're working in a very small building in Chapel Hill, and I think they would benefit greatly from having additional space, and the space that you're considering now would be an ideal location for them to, you know, continue their good work and to expand the offerings that they have, so that it would serve the community both now and in the future. So I'm just here to speak on behalf of Pace Academy, saying that it's a good place to send children to school. It's a good resource for the community, and it's something that Carrboro should be proud to have in its midst and be a place to make it a better town.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Mr. Howard. Rhonda Franklin.
Hello, my name is Rhonda Franklin. I'm actually the principal of Pace Academy. In 2003, Jane Miller and myself wrote a proposal for a charter school to the state of North Carolina. Before I go any further, half of the people that are still sitting here are part of our Pace Academy community.
Wave, y'all.
Everybody wave.
All right. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, definitely.
More than half, for sure.
Yeah. The mission of Pace Academy is to support the academic growth, emotional development, and professional readiness of all students. We believe in community-based learning. We believe community-based learning promotes sound decision-making, encourages independent problem-solving, and provides our future workforce with prerequisite skills for securing and maintaining post-secondary employment. The reason we wanted to open a charter school was to give students a chance to be successful socially, academically, and professionally in a unique learning environment. When Pace Academy was initially approved, the only viable space we could find was around 6,800 square feet on Legion Road in Chapel Hill. Since our inaugural year in 2004, we have definitely outgrown our facility. Countless students seeking enrollment each year are turned away due to lack of available space. For 5 years, we have desperately been seeking a larger facility. In 2009, the Harris Building came available, and we took off running to obtain the facility. Pace Academy attracts a high number of students from Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Orange, Durham, Chatham County, as well as Wake County, with a variety of needs. Over half of our students have learning disability, cognitive impairments, and different disabilities. After years of academic or social challenges in other schools, they tend to thrive in our learning environment that we've created at Pace. The increased space at the Harris Building will allow us to increase and expand diverse curriculum offerings necessary to support the Pace Academy community and students. Vocational training is one of our primary goals. However, due to our current space, we have been limited to only offering career tracks in computers and art. If we are to obtain this new facility with over 20,000 square foot of instructional space, we would be allowed to develop and sustain a two-year certification program for future cosmetologists, an agri-science program with landscape design, sustainable agriculture, sustainable farming methods, horticulture, early childhood development, all of these things, welding, carpentry, as well as auto mechanics. The vocational programming of Pace Academy would provide both valuable and necessary services to the community at large. Such a location will serve the needs of the community by producing well-trained, vocationally-minded high school graduates ready to join the workforce. I thank you for your time. And okay. If there are any questions?
Thank you. Jane Miller?
I just had a quick question. Currently, how many students do you
currently
have?
Currently, we serve about 120.
And this would allow you to expand to?
200, 300 students. We thrive on being a small school, considering the population of students that we attract, so we like to keep a 15-to-1 student ratio, small class sizes.
Okay.
Do you, are your classes daytime and evening?
They are daytime.
And do you anticipate any type of, like, gymnasium area?
Not initially, but we would like to in the future.
Okay.
Okay, Jane Miller.
Happy Thanksgiving. I appreciate you taking time to listen to us this evening. First, I want to recognize everyone who came out to support Pace Academy's proposed move. Quite simply, Pace Academy needs space to grow, and the community needs Pace Academy. I don't want to repeat everything that Rhonda said, but I do want to explain that we offer programming in the occupational and the career courses of study, so that we're not preparing the college preparatory curriculum students. We are really trying to train the students who are going to be a part of this community, not just in the years they're growing up, but in the years that they're adults. And it is very important, we believe, that they are well-trained and well-equipped to be productive members of the community. All in all, Pace Academy can utilize the proposed site to offer this region unparalleled instructional programming for students with disabilities. I'm quite pleased with the progress that we've made with students like Ahmad and Sarah and Laura, who are here this evening. So just please take that into consideration. You hold Pace Academy's future in your hands.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Craig, and then Brian Hughes.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Gray, and I am a parent of a child who is at PACE. I also happen to be a professor at UNC, and my area of study is communication disorders. I have watched my own son since 12 months of age struggle with all kinds of communication issues and different learning styles. Certainly at middle school, we began to see lots of differences and falling behind, wanting to quit school, wanting to all kinds of things. Pace Academy was the place that he's really found a home. I've seen him grow and mature. He started to go out into the community and do jobs and take part in all kinds of activities. But if any of you went in PACE and saw this very small little area and the very small classrooms, you would say, this is a place that needs more space and needs a room to grow. All the kinds of programs that they're talking about are going to be very important to my kid in terms of looking for alternatives for preparing for his life. Many of you may know any dollar spent in special education, which certainly this school does plenty of, is about a $7 return spent for, you could name almost any area in terms of welfare, work, pregnancy, incarceration, you know, go on down the line, and you could see the savings of dollars spent. These are certainly kids at risk in many, many ways, but certainly risks of leaving school and not wanting to take part in school and getting their full potential. And so we all feel that it's really important for them to have as many possible programs as possible. And I think they're just scratching the surface on these kinds of vocational. They have to go everywhere else to be able to do these things and don't have place in this little very small space to do the kids the kind of training that the kids need before they go out to the community. So space, I think, is going to be real important for them and real important for the lives of these kids and maybe hundreds of others over the years, that we can find an alternative who are failing in our schools. And it's not that our schools aren't good schools. It's just the schools are sort of a cookie-cutter form, and you can be at the very top and maybe at the very, very bottom, but the kids kind of a little bit from there get lost in the shuffle, and mine certainly did. And so this is a place that has a lot of reward for these kids.
Okay. Thanks very much. Brian Hughes.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Brian Hughes. I'm a former Pace Academy student. I graduated in 08, and I just can't imagine what I'd done without Pace Academy and the staff there. I went from failing in the public school system to going to Pace Academy and making straight A's my first semester. They helped me get my first part-time job at Earth Fair, and they also helped me get a full-time job out in the community, which I'm working at currently right now with full health benefits and dental. There's so much I could say, but I'm going to keep it brief. They really need this space, because if you do walk in there, you could tell that they need more space, and there's so many students that want to go there right now.
Thank you. All right. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks.
Okay. Are there any other questions for the staff on this? Is there a motion on the for the
move attachment A1?
Excuse me, Mr. Manager.
Second.
I want to make sure, Trish, if you could come up again. I want to make sure you all know the differences between the original and the proposed, because it is more limiting. And Trish, I haven't had a chance to ask to make sure the applicant understands what the differences are.
Yeah.
Okay.
She does.
Because the question came up about, will there be a gym? And the answer was maybe at some point in the future. This, I don't believe, would allow the building to be expanded. So I don't know if they were talking about expanding within the building.
Was it not allowed? Well, why don't you tell us? What does it allow?
Well, I mean, that isn't something that we had anticipated in our conversations in addition to the building. And so this does not anticipate either version of the ordinance doesn't anticipate a change like that to the mm-hmm. to the building. And if that's an issue that needs to be examined further, then we'd need to spend a little bit more time talking about it.
Well, I assume it sounded like it was pretty far out future possibilities. So I think
And I wasn't even sure how large the building is either. I wasn't sure, I wasn't sure the makeup of the current size of the building. Anyway,
it's pretty large.
I thought, yeah, but I wasn't, I didn't.
Okay. It has parking areas and
all right.
That was.
So, Dan, you.
I moved attachment A1.
Well, is
the
it
resolution
the substitute resolution or the modified resolution?
There
isn't
a modified A1. There's just a modified
it's just
A.
Yeah. Replacement attachment
which
B.
Moved.
Right.
Okay. So it's been moved and seconded by Randy Haven O'Donnell as a seconder. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously.
Move substitute resolution B. Attachment B.
Second.
And moved and seconded for substitute B. All those in favor of turning beer distributorship into plowshares.
All right.
signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously. All right. Good luck, guys. Okay.
Thank you.
All
right. agenda item number 3. These are, as I understand it, these proposed changes to notice requirements are mandated by the General Assembly. Is that right?
Yes, it's just really just changing our ordinance to conform to the general statutes with respect to the notification requirements.
Does anybody have any questions for the staff about this?
I wondered why we have a public hearing just in case someone has comments, because it sounds like we have to do it. I mean, is that the case, really?
Well, in a purely technical sense, it's required anyway, but I think this just puts the notification requirements in the ordinance so that anybody. Otherwise, if you didn't do it, you'd still be required to do it, but people might not see it in the ordinance.
But we're having a hearing tonight because land use ordinance text amendments require a
that's
hearing.
Correct.
Right. Yeah.
That's
I correct. Got you. Okay. Yeah, I don't have any.
Is there? There's no one signed up. Is there anyone here to speak on this item?
Move the item.
Second. And moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. The matter passes unanimously. Is there? Are we done with that?
Done.
Yes.
Okay. Item number 4, public hearing on land use ordinance text amendment modify income limits for affordable units.
Are we hearing this tonight or just continuing?
Staff
had recommended, we notified you all last week, we were recommending because there still needs to be some tweaking done to the draft ordinance. We suggested continuing this hearing to February 23rd, so we had not planned to do a presentation, and unless there's someone signed up that needs to hear something or you all need to hear from staff, our preference would be to wait until February.
Since it is continued, but having been given the opportunity, I don't know about what the rest of the board, but this might be telegraphing my future complaints about reducing it from 15% to 12.5%. But I would like to see more of than just text and narrative about what developers say about the cost of doing this type of housing. And so I would prefer to see some hard numbers.
What the development community thinks about right. this type of change? Or
right. And I guess, you know, not to say that, I mean, I understand the reasoning for it, and so I'm not criticizing the reasoning. I do criticize the concept of the 12.5, from 15% to 12.5%, and although it's only 2.5%, it seems to me in conflict for what we really want, where we want to get to at the end, and I don't know if this is the method to get us to where we want to be.
Okay.
Do you have another idea?
I don't have one now, but now that I have until February, I may have one in January, I may have one in December.
Oh, okay, well, we'll...
I know one thing, I don't like this one. So, right. Know that telegraph.
Okay, see, we anticipated that. So,
this is a telegraphy opportunity, Robert. We pay you well enough to have you come back February 23rd, just barely.
3 days after okay. my birthday.
All right. Is there a motion to table this until the 23rd?
Second.
I just want. Are you going to open it and continue the hearing,
yes.
Or are you going to re-advertise the hearing?
We were going to open it and continue it.
Okay, well, then you need to open it and then continue it.
Okay, is the motion to open and continue?
So moved.
Second.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
That you're continuing it to?
February 23rd.
Okay. 23rd.
And if we could, at least on one point that Alderman Brown was making, maybe we could make a point of notifying or getting in touch with the people at the Orange Durham Home Builders Association to ask for their feedback on this matter.
They might want to say something.
They may not. They're welcome to. Okay.
I have a procedural question about
yes.
that. Because I don't remember us having motions to open public hearings typically.
I think the attorney's just trying to clarify that there was a hearing tonight at the beginning of a hearing started tonight.
That you were continuing an open public hearing as opposed to rescheduling or something. I was being somewhat technical.
It makes a difference in whether we have to pay for advertising
like,
in
re-advertise.
The newspaper again.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand that. Thanks.
Okay. And we did hear from at least one Harborough resident right. about what she thinks about it. Okay.
That's correct. That is quite correct.
All right. There is a request for, well.
So moved. Moved that we go into a closed session to discuss a matter involving attorney-client privilege.
Okay.
Second, apparently. So.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. All right, let's make it quick.